It's haunting and it's lyrical. It's the After the Buzzer theme. Here we are, gang, with another edition of The Big Show. Mike Gross and Gordy Jones with his Grateful Dead t-shirt on. How you doing, my man?
Outstanding. That's and good. Yourself?
I'm good. I'm well. I was in the Big Apple over the weekend. And,
nice.
We're tanned, rested, and ready. and, you know, it's baseball season. We're headed toward the All-Star break. And so it seems like an appropriate time for our guest, who is a baseball guy, former Harrisburg Patriot News and Penn Live sports writer, and current purveyor of one of the more interesting baseball Facebook pages.
Indeed.
Which Gordy and I both monitor. And we're going to talk a little baseball with Andrew Linker. My man, welcome to the Big Show again. I think this is your third
At
time.
Least, you, I think you get the cutlery now.
Yeah.
Do I forgot? Thank you. I will be waiting by the mailbox.
Yeah, that'll be one of them Amazon.
Yes, Amazon please. Because I'm not sure what's going on with UPS these days.
Yeah. So anyway, one of the things that I wanted to let's start with is that Major League Baseball instituted a pitch clock.
Yes.
And I, as far as I can tell, it has worked. It has shortened the game, and the way that it has shortened the game is taken nonsense out and left, and not taken anything out that anybody would miss. At least that's how I see it. So this is the rare reform in any area of human endeavor that, as far as I can see, doesn't have a downside. How do you feel about the pitch clock?
I like the pitch clock. I have been around it since 2015, since it was introduced first in the minor leagues. And you can see, really from day one, you know, when they started to enforce it, and they've been tweaking the rules ever since 2015, up to the point of introducing it to the majors this year, you can see where it's reduced games by upwards of a half hour.
Yeah.
And really the only people it's hurting, frankly, are the people selling hot dogs and beer and trying to get all that in, because the game now, instead of being 3 hours on a major level, is 2 hours and 30 minutes. In the minor leagues now, if you have a game 2 hours and 30 minutes, it seems long. So it's definitely working. You're right, guys. It's cut out the nonsense. I really don't know how guys like Mike Hargrove from the 70s and Garcia Parra, how they would survive in today's game. They probably would have to try a different sport. But you're right. It's cutting out all the nonsense. We don't have to hear the entire 2-minute walk-up song. We can get it now in 30 seconds. and it just goes to show you that you really don't need to do all this stepping in and stepping out and adjusting your batting glove 12 times. It'll stay on the first time.
Yeah, Nomar seemed obsessed with Velcro.
Yeah,
that seemed to be his problem. Yeah, so he would have had to get past his Velcro addiction, which he may have been able to do.
He might have been. He probably would have just had to glue the gloves on. But it's really done a lot. And I think, you know, one of the things that's helped, you know, by introducing it as early as 2015 in the minor leagues, you know, the guys now in the big leagues for their first, second, and third year, they went through the minor leagues with this. So it's no big deal for these guys to have a pitch clock. And they're just going to try to wait, for some of the older folks just to eventually just cycle through. I don't know if you noticed last night, Evan Longoria was called out on a third strike on a pitch violation because he took too long.
Wow.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, I mean, Longoria, you know, he broke into the big leagues in 2008 with Tampa Bay. And, I don't know. Apparently, all these players on every level have gotten the message because, Longoria got called out on a pitch violation last night with Arizona. He didn't say a word. He just put his head down and walked back to the dugout. So, I think there's probably and I haven't seen it in the minor leagues where it gets called a little bit more often, the pitch violations. I think these players are told, you do not argue, just this is the new world.
Yeah, right. I was going to say that. I think there was a brief period where the players and maybe even the managers, their attitude was a little bit was, are they serious about this? Are they really going to make this stick? It became evident that they were, and, you know,
which
it
I
wasn't
get,
that hard.
Which I get, because in every other sport, when they say this is going to be a point of emphasis, it's a point of emphasis for about
15
a week.
Minutes. Yeah. You know, yeah, that's right. But this is not a point of emphasis. This is a specific, tangible, and it, as you suggested, Andy,
right.
It took them a couple tweaks to get it. Yeah.
And the umpires have been told, you will enforce this. And, I mean, to the point where teams now have to, you know, basically not have to ask for permission, but give a heads up to the umpires. So when you have a player coming back, he's been with the team the last couple of years, he's coming back to face his old team, he's going to get an ovation. Mm-hmm. The team might say, look, you know, this guy's coming back, he's going to get an ovation. Let's not penalize him because it runs more than 30
seconds. I didn't think of that. I didn't know that that's happened. Yeah. Okay.
So well, Cal Ripken, game 21-31, I guess he would have been tossed out of that game, right?
He would have one strike, two strike, three strike.
That would have been it. As he's rounding the ballpark, he would have been like called out on strikes.
He would have just kept going.
Yeah.
That actually happened earlier this year when Gene Segura, who of course was such a key player for the Phillies the last few years now with the Marlins came back and the Phillies knew, look, this guy's going to get an ovation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's not do something silly like, you know, give him an automatic strike. That seems kind of cold. Welcome back to Philly, strike one.
That's not a little Philly-like to me.
Actually, if it's going to happen any place, it's going to happen in my hometown of Philadelphia.
There you go. So I feel compelled to ask you both, if you had a walk-up song, what would it be, Andy Linker?
Sending the Clowns.
Mike Gross, what would your walk-up song be?
Mine would be Won't Get Fooled Again.
I like that. Yeah, I like that a lot.
I think that.
And yours, Gordy?
Mine would be Freebird, the entire song. Games would last for weeks.
So it would be strike 12.
So do you still watch the All-Star Game, Andy? Does it still hold the appeal it might have at one point in your life?
You know, I hold the same appeal, no, because I think when you grow up, when, you know, watching the All-Star game, and in my case, being, you know, 800 years old, you know, seeing Willie Mays and Hank Aaron and Roberto Clemente, you know, when you're 10, 11, 12 years old, mm-hmm. there's that certain magic. I don't know if it holds that anymore. I suppose it does to the kids now that they're 10, 11, and 12. I think it's gone away from being the competitive game it was before. It's always been the best of the four major sports All-Star games.
Because you can't fudge it. You still have to stand there and throw the ball.
Yeah, you got to the at-bats or the at-bats, yeah.
Right, and you still have to catch the ball. It's not like the NBA where there's no defense.
It's just so unwatchable, that. And the Pro Bowl as well.
And in hockey, you know, the poor goalies are just nothing but targets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're facing 90 shots a period.
Yeah, and here's the other part of it. I think interleague play has maybe taken some of the appeal out of it, because, you know, the All-Star game used to be, you know, at one point, it was the only time you were going to see, you know, Mickey Mantle and Willie Mays on the same field unless they met in the World Series. That was really and really further on than that's going way back. But I, you know, even into the 80s, really.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. I think it loses a little bit of the luster. I think it takes a little bit off the World Series too, because you have teams that have seen each other, if not this season, then the season before. Yeah, I kind of like the separate but equal leagues, but you know, it's baseball tries to do its best, I think, and sometimes it doesn't do very well. But I can't blame them for trying to reach a fan base that's somewhat younger than 50.
That's right.
You know, and so they're doing all these things. You know, and some of the stuff is really good with the new rules, and some of it's just like, okay, I think we're going to have to tweak that, you know, into oblivion. And some things, fortunately, never get off the drawing board. But I can't damn baseball for trying to increase its fan base. I mean, basketball's done that. The NFL is king because they own every day of the freaking week. Can I say freaking on a podcast?
Yes.
We've said much worse, actually. Yeah. As I told you, I have a judge I work for. He monitors our use of profanity.
Well, okay then.
Yeah, you're well on the safe side of the line with freaking. Come on,
I know.
Don't worry.
I was thinking of George Carlin's lexicon and what I can get away with.
Yes,
right. But I won't do that.
Well, speaking of that,
it still holds. The All-Star Game still holds an appeal for me. I do enjoy watching the All-Star Game. I loathe the Home Run Derby.
Yeah.
I love the Futures Game, which is played on the Sunday.
That's
absolutely love the Futures Game. Mm. And then the All-Star Parade of, that seems pretty contrived. You know, everybody's just wearing their, $5,000 watches. But, Guy and Gordy, you were going to ask me something that I probably don't know the answer to.
No, it was just a tangent that I had, which is we tend to go on tangents on this pod, but you mentioned Carlin, and I just wondered it brought to mind his great thing about comparing baseball and football. Just what a wonderful, wonderful thing that was back in the day.
It was, yeah. And it's relatively clean by Carlin standards.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, that's funny. We were just talking about that the other day. My family, we were talking about my kid was talking about his nephew, who's a little guy, and when can we introduce him to George Carlin? And I was saying, well, the baseball football thing might be okay.
It's so good. It's so on point.
If Walter Alston wore a football helmet in the dugout, they would carry him away.
Football is played in a stadium, War Memorial Stadium.
played in the park. Well, the other thing about baseball right now, I think, is that there are a lot of great young players. So let's touch on Ohtani for a moment, because he is unbelievable. I saw among the many numbers, he's currently hitting 300 and opponents are hitting 189 against him. I mean, that's not the whole picture, but
that's,
I like it.
That's some Babe Ruth shit right there.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. You know, when he first comes up to the big leagues, in 2018, and people, he pitches, he hits, okay, it's kind of a gimmick, but the more he plays, the better he gets every year. I mean, it's just stunning when you look at what he's doing this year. He's leading the major leagues with home runs, with triples, with slugging percentage, with on base and slugging percentage, with total bases. And, he's hitting 296, and he's hitting balls 500 feet. And, oh, by the way, he's a pretty darn good pitcher, too.
Yeah.
I mean, his lifetime record is 35-18, for goodness sakes. He's got a 3.04 ERA, which, if you translate back into, say, the 60s or 70s, would probably be around a 2.2.
Yeah.
He's got 132 strikeouts and 100 innings. I mean, this stuff goes beyond Babe Ruth.
It really does, yeah. Now, that's fair. And especially because Babe Ruth, there was a point when he didn't try to do it anymore. There was a clear delineation point. I'm not sure that's happening with this dude.
And also, in Babe Ruth's era, he wasn't playing against black players, much less people.
Well, that's the whole thing about any player or any achievement.
That's a whole different argument where, it's a very monochromatic game when Ruth is playing.
Right,
yeah.
Also, the ballparks are bigger. They're playing day games. Today it's night games. It's actually probably easier to play day games all the time. So all the variables, it's hard to judge one era against. Obviously, Babe Ruth was great in his era and would have been, probably exceptional in any era, obviously.
Right.
Ohtani, though, is just such a freak that, in a good way, it's not like Shrek. But, not that Shrek is bad, but Shrek good. I'm sorry. I digress. But every time you think, okay, Ohtani's just a gimmick, he's going to wind up just gravitating toward hitting. Mm-hmm. His win totals, he had the surgery, but in 2021, he's 9-2. Last year he's 15-9. This year he's 7-4. So he's on pace to do just as well, if not better, than last season. And that's just as a pitcher.
Yeah, yeah. He might be him as a hitter and him as a pitcher might both be MVP candidates. That's a little bit of a reach, but it's not that much of a reach.
Oh, he's an MVP candidate right now.
No question. Yeah. He's the favorite right now.
And maybe Cy Young. I don't know how everybody's close.
But Mike is saying that if he just specialized in one or the other, he'd still be the MVP. You know,
he's something.
Absolutely, and so it's so much fun to watch. It's definitely must see TV.
Yeah, he'll look good with the Dodgers next year, right?
Yeah, it could be with the Dodgers. It could be with the Dodgers by the end of the season.
Yeah, that's true.
At some point, the Angels are going to have to make a decision of what they're thinking about in terms of wild card. And you know, right now they're four games out of a wild card spot, which is nothing. The Angels are going to be in a bad spot. They're going to keep them, I think, because they're not going to fall out of the race that quickly because they have Ohtani. So they're going to keep them, but then at the end of the season, somebody's going to come up.
Oh, with a big bag of money. Big bag of money.
With a half a billion dollars.
Yeah, and deservedly so, given the current market.
Well, let me ask you guys this. If Ohtani was coming into the market solely as a hitter, he would get $30 million a year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If he was a... Well, we talk about this like it's our money, right? and if he came into the market as solely as a pitcher, he'd make $20 million a year by today's standards.
Yeah. So there you go. There's the money, $50 million.
There's your first $50 million a year player.
And yeah. I think not without reason. I think you can, I mean, how could you not argue that? You know?
I can't argue against it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And how old is the guy? I don't even know.
He's 29 years old.
Oh, so well, there you go.
He's
so
he's going to get a 10-year contract.
Here's an interesting thing to think about, I think. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, not at all.
No, it's your show.
It's our show. But anyway, if you look at high school baseball and American Legion baseball, often the best player on a high school baseball team is a pitcher/shortstop. Or a pitcher slash first baseman or whatever.
Yes.
So now that Ohtani has kind of broken this barrier, will we see more of it? I don't think we're going to see a lot of it because there just aren't many guys like this. But will we see more of it? Certainly an element in the complete lack of it for 100 years was that baseball people didn't believe it was a good idea. Certainly that was part of it. So now with this spectacular example to the contrary, will we see a little bit more of it?
Yes.
Yeah.
At first blush, I mean, you're going to, at some point, you're going to have a superior athlete that can do both.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And an organization is going to say, let them try it. There have been situations, and one that pops to mind just because I remember watching him play at Riverside Stadium when he was a five-year-old kid and his father was a manager of the Senators, was a kid who, at this point, probably 12 years ago, at a high school, Casey Kelly, the son of Pat Kelly, a former...
Wow, there's a name.
Yeah.
There have been three Pat Kellys who play Major League Baseball.
Yeah, so... The outfielder for the O's, the infielder for the Yankees. Who's the third one?
The third one is the one I'm talking about.
Okay, well, there you go.
He was a catcher with the Blue Jays. He's proud to go tell us he's been managing in the minor leagues for 30 years. He always tells his players he was a lifetime 286 hitter in the major leagues.
2 for 7?
He doesn't tell me it was just 2 for 7. Now, his son, Casey Kelly, when Pat Kelly was the manager in Harrisburg in 1995 and 96, obviously he was bringing his family with him, and he had kids from 5 years old to 12 years old at the time. And the youngest was Casey Kelly, all 5 years old. And this kid would run around the field, and, you know, I'm looking at him going, boy, I'll tell you what, he's a little short, but you might mistake him for a Class A player who just got up here.
Wow.
He's doing everything. And the thing with Casey Kelly, and I'll try to make a short story a little longer here, is that in high school in Sarasota, he was an exceptional pitcher. and an exceptional hitter. And the Boston Red Sox drafted him to be a pitcher, but he wanted to also play shortstop. Mm-hmm. So they let him play shortstop for his first year in rookie league and low A ball before saying, no, okay, you're going to be a pitcher now. Mm-hmm. And as it turns out, you know, it didn't work out for him in the big leagues. There were some injuries. Now he is a star in the Korean baseball organization. I kid you not. He's been there 5 years. He's one of the best pitchers. But I guess what I'm saying is now as we fast forward from the early part of, can I say the early part of the millennium? Because now we're in 2023.
Well, I think you can. I think you need to.
We're getting to the middle of the new millennium. Or the middle of the, never mind.
Yeah, the passage of time is pretty incredible. I mean, so yeah, I think you're well within.
It is, but I think what's going to happen, guys, is a prospect like Casey Kelly a dozen years ago, who wanted to play both, and even back then, baseball's like, you're going to have to pick one or the other. I think as we get into where we are now, and you get exceptional kids and people and organizations see what Shohei Ohtani has done, they're going to let kids maybe play. You know, okay, you pitch once a week like Ohtani, and you'll be a position player the other time.
Because it is possible. I mean,
it doesn't seem that unworkable.
No, it does.
It was always thought of like it was a terrible logistical problem. It doesn't seem that unworkable, really.
No, not when you pitch every 5 days. Yeah. I mean, what's the big deal?
Yeah. And Ohtani pitches once a week. Yeah. He pitches once a week.
And now you also have teams going to a six-man rotation, which the Angels have done, which is what part of it's because of Ohtani, because coming from Japan, they have six-man rotations in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's like any sport, it's everything's an imitation. If something works well for one team in another sport, then every other team's going to do it. They've been doing that forever.
It's a copycat. Well, in every sport, it's a copycat thing.
Hey,
I wanted to ask you about the Phillies. On June 2nd, they were 25-32. They are now 46-39, meaning they've won 21 of their last 28, including their last 11 on the road. What has changed from where you sit?
It's a good question. It's getting performances that they didn't necessarily expect. Mm-hmm. Taiwan Walker comes to mind.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think Craig Kimball has found himself.
Yeah.
I mean, his ERA is still, you know, north of 3, which you don't want on paper for a closer, but he's given up almost nothing in the month of June now into July.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you have certain pieces that are just falling into place. Kimball one, Walker another. You're getting performances. You know, guys, you're starting to get a lineup and a feel for it. And it's kind of not unlike what they did last year at about this time.
Right about this time,
When Rob Thompson took over and they started taking off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think they solidified themselves a little bit, believe it or not. How do I say this? With Cody Clemens at first base allowed them to play Alex Bond more at third.
Which makes sense,
You know, now he was doing a good job going back and forth, but, you know, they were using Sosa at third, and Sosa's great coming off the bench.
He is.
So, you know, he's getting a little overexposed now. They keep Bond at third. Now, of course, they got Derek Hall back, so Clemens is in Triple A, they're getting a nice performance. Obviously, Castellanos being an all-star. I think Realmuto is still showing he's the best overall catcher in baseball.
Yeah,
at least in the National League.
He's like the catcher from Central Casting. You know what I mean? You look at him, and you think that's what a catcher should look like. You know what I mean?
That is true, and that's a good analogy. He is from Central Casting.
Yeah.
I think it's a matter of finding their legs a little bit. Now, having said that, I don't think they're going to catch the Braves.
No.
But
nor do they have to. I mean, it's like it matters. Yeah. What matters is how they stack up, you know, in October. So, as they showed
exactly
last year.
Exactly right. I mean, last year, if you know, it's funny. We wouldn't be talking about the Phillies, and they certainly wouldn't have been the feel-good story last year if Milwaukee just didn't fold. in the final 2 weeks of the season.
I forgot about that. I forgot about that.
Yeah, I mean, Milwaukee just collapsed. They were in a situation they had to win one game or two games, couldn't do that. And the Phillies get in as the last wild card, and they do kind of a Los Angeles Lakers Miami Heat in the NBA. I threw it out there for you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah.
I know you're a big round ball fan. but you know what? As much as we like the Phillies now, and they're tied with San Francisco for the last spot in the wild card, and Milwaukee's right behind them.
Well, there's a lot of teams right in there around 46, 50 wins.
Yeah. Right. Sure. Yeah. I mean, the Marlins are 3.5. The Phillies are only a game and a half behind the Dodgers with that. And of course, the Dodgers are a mess right now with injuries to their pitching staff. In fact, I think they're asking if Koufax can still pitch, which he can.
He probably could.
Yes, he probably could. So yeah, I think they're doing a nice job with what they're doing, and you're at the point now where the Phillies, or frankly the Dodgers, there's not that urgency anymore to win the division.
Yeah, that's right.
Because especially with the wild card, you just have to win one.
Let's talk a little bit about another guy. I just thought of this because we were talking about the Braves. Acuna, the kid, the outfielder for the Braves, who. A couple things about him that are interesting, other than the fact that he's a great, great player. Three things I can think of. One, he illustrates the fact that the stolen base is a little bit back now. He's got 41 of them. Two, he illustrates the idea that maybe leadoff man, the definition of that is changing, and maybe you just put your best guy in the first spot in the order so he gets more at-bats than everybody else. Number three, I notice I've heard complaints in the past about him because he doesn't always play hard, doesn't run balls out, and at times that's been glaring. It's actually hurt his team a little bit. People don't seem too troubled by that, apparently, because he was the leading vote getter in the National League. So those are three things. Andy, choose any one of them and lend us your fill the airwaves.
Fill the airwaves. Yeah. He is the best player in the game not named Ohtani. And it's not just a matter of getting the votes. The 41 stolen bases are just fantastic. And that's one of the reasons behind increasing the size of the base this year.
Yep.
To make it from the normal 15-inch square to making it the size of a pizza box. to increase the running game. And here you have a fella that he's hitting .337, 21 home runs, 41 steals, is an on-base slugging percentage of over 1,000.
Yep.
You know, if you go back two generations, this is what Bobby Bonds was supposed to be. Barry Bonds, Bobby Bonds.
I remember that, yeah.
Power, speed, and that combination. He plays the game with a lot of style. And sometimes that style, you kind of forget you got to move around the base as fast as you can. But you know what? If I'm the Atlanta Braves and Brian Snitker, the manager, I'm looking at a .337 batting average, a .594 slugging percentage, 41 steals, 21 home runs. That's out of my leadoff guy. If he has a lapse on the base every now and then, running the bases, I'm probably going to be okay with that.
There's no more kangaroo courts like the Orioles used to have, or Frank Robinson had that mop on his head and he was fining people for not running out balls or anything like that.
No, that doesn't exist anymore. And that's too bad because you could make a lot of money with guys not running out balls or guys hot-dogging on home runs or... Ronald Arosiana from Tampa Bay just posturing whenever he hits a home run.
Right.
Which is colorful, and, on one hand, old school baseball guys are going, don't do that. And new school is like, if it gets young eyeballs watching and turning on a younger group generation of fans of the game, then bad flip till your heart's content.
Interesting. One guy that we have not talked about, who is a guy who there's a chance that we could have a 400 hitter. I mean, probably not, but he's been flirting with it.
Yeah.
Is this Luis Arraez? Is that how you say that? Of Miami?
Arraez, yeah.
Yeah. He's down to 384. I think they need to bench him.
You know, it's funny because I almost the entirety of my exposure to him is on SportsCenter highlights.
Right.
And you're watching him hit on these highlights and you think, this guy's the best hitter who ever lived. Mm-hmm. I mean, guys are throwing him these breaking balls that are down at his ankles and he's just stroking them. Now, of course, this is when he's going for 5 for 5. But
because of that, he has one of the best nicknames in baseball. He's called the Sprinkler.
Yeah, he does sprinkle it around.
I'm just not going there.
Good call on your part, Andy.
This guy's been in Major League Baseball for 5 years. His lowest batting average has been .294.
Right.
The funny thing, Minnesota was all happy to trade him for a starting pitcher because he doesn't hit with power.
Mm.
He doesn't have launch angle.
Drink. Everybody drink.
And all this nonsense. So. Exit velo. He leads the American League in hitting last year, and he's under contract for two more years, and they want to trade him for a guy who's a number three pitcher in Pablo Lopez. Mm. And no offense to Pablo, but I got the American League's leading hitter, but I'm Minnesota. I'm all too happy to trade him.
Yeah,
and obviously, you know, he's had a tough time adjusting because he's went from 316 to 384.
Bench him
with Miami.
Just bench him.
Just bench him because he's slumping.
Get him out of here.
But you know what? When you watch him and you watch, I'm sure he doesn't even think about launch angle or exit velocity because
he's not uppercutting it.
No, it's
he's not putting the driver on a tee and you know that it's a much different approach. But obviously when it works to this extreme, you know, you got Tony Gwynn here. Take it.
Well, that's what you're having. And before Gwynn, and that's a good analogy, and I don't want to put him in the same category as Tony Gwynn, although he's got a .327 lifetime batting average, which is not too far behind the great Tony Gwynn.
I mean, if he does it
but
for 10
nice
years.
But the nice comparison is he'll take the ball the other way and hit it to left field.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
And a guy who made a living out of doing that in the 80s, besides Gwynn, in the 80s and 90s, was Mark Grace.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
I was also going to go Ichiro too. Ichiro always looked like he was hitting a tennis backhand when he was hitting. You know what I mean?
Ichiro's a great comparison. And the thing with Ichiro though is, which would separate him from Arraez, and would separate him a little bit from Tony Gwynn and certainly Mark Grace. Ichiro was freakishly strong.
Yeah, he could have hit 30 home runs if he wanted to. If that was his aim.
He probably could have hit 35 to 40 if he wanted to.
Yeah.
But that's not what his game was all about. And if you want to go back, if we want to date ourselves, guys that maybe we saw when we were kids, Ty Cobb, for example. Ty Cobb was a guy that...
Yeah, I interviewed him a couple times.
Ty Cobb didn't like Bruce's approach, and Cobb would say that, if I wanted to, I could hit home runs too, but that wasn't Cobb's game.
Right.
So you have players like that can do that, but Ichiro's a good comp. This kid's just fun to watch. To me, he's must-watch TV when the Marlins are on. You can tune out the other eight guys if you want. But when this guy comes up at the top of the order, you have to watch him.
It's pretty good. I wanted to ask you about another top of the order guy, and that's Trey Turner. I mean, he sort of suffered through the same kind of season that Castellanos did last year, and I don't know if that's Philly or just the money or expectations or whatever it is, but he's certainly not performing as they might have expected. I mean, what's your read on him?
I think, I don't know. I haven't talked to him, so you don't know what's in somebody's mind, obviously. But, I think you get a big old bag of money like he got, and He's quasi-local because his wife's family's from New Jersey, which we all really know is Eastern Pennsylvania. Yes. and hey, listen, people from Jersey, they don't know where I live. But the big thing with Turner is his on-base percentage.
Yeah, it's like 300.
It's 302, which negates his speed. I mean, if Turner does a typical Turner year, he's on base at a 340, 350 clip, instead of 18 stolen bases, he probably has 25 on his way to 50. He's 18-0 with stolen bases. It's just a matter of getting on base.
I was going to say, when he hits, he has stolen bases. When he has struggled offensively, nothing. And, for obvious reasons,
I think with Trey Turner, he's going to age well in Philadelphia. It's a good ballpark for him.
Yeah,
it's a good situation for him. It's a good organization. I think he's going to do very well. It's like anything. Sometimes you move to a new team, and sometimes you struggle big time, like Francisco Lindor, or sometimes you're like Luis Urena going to Miami, and you don't even miss a beat. And Trey Turner somewhere is in between. There's still 40% of the season remaining, and I don't think you'll see Trey Turner finishing up the year hitting 248.
No, that's crazy to me. It's like it looks like a mistake in the box score. Yeah. You know what I mean?
It could just be every player in the history of baseball that's had a long career has had 100 at bats where they were just not a very good player, and maybe he had his 100 at bats and he's digging out from under that. That's the positive the positive take on Turner, but he is a very good player. And
oh my gosh,
yeah.
You know, in the shortstop free agent market last winter.
Right, there were four of them.
There were four of them, and you look at it, gosh, he's a better overall player than Correa and Bogarts and Swanson. If you take the offensive side of the ball, the defensive side of the ball, and the ability to run bases, Turner was the best free agent of the four.
And they got him.
And they got him, and I think it's gonna, be just fine. Yeah. Let it play out.
Yeah. He's just too, as Mike said, he's just too good a player. Not to have, the production long term, I would think.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about the Orioles. When we talked on the phone yesterday, we were talking about they're 50-35. They trailed Tampa Bay in the AL East, which is really good. And they've had this trickle of young players. Adley Rutschman is in the All-Star game. Their catcher. Gunnar Henderson has come up as an infielder. He's produced. This season they brought off Jordan Westberg, a third baseman, and just in the last couple of days, Colton Cowser, an outfielder. And I guess my question, as always with the Orioles, is, they have the makings of a good young team, but is their owner going to pay enough to keep these guys around long term so this is a long-running hit as opposed to just a blip on the radar?
Well, I don't think they're a blip on the radar in terms of talent. They have really rebuilt their minor leagues. It's obviously paying off now. As far as down the road is 5 or 6 years for these guys. With having to get paid, and you don't know where the Angelos family will be in terms of ownership in 5 or 6 years. But my goodness, to bring up the people they have, and a couple guys I haven't even mentioned yet is Grayson Rodriguez, their top pitching prospect, who struggled in a very small sample size this season, he has all the tools. And their number one prospect is Jackson Holliday.
Yeah, and that's a familiar name to baseball fans, Matt Holliday's kid, so he should be able to hit, I would think.
he's doing fairly well. Eventually in December he'll turn 20. Right now as a 19-year-old, he was hitting he started the year hitting .396 at Delmarva, and they thought, he's probably conquered that league in the Carolina League. And now with Aberdeen, he's hitting .310. In his short career, he's hit .322 in 90 games. Now, it's all A-ball, but there's no reason to believe this kid just won't keep on hitting. I mean, he's a middle infielder, 6'185". He has speed, he has power. And he bats left-handed as a middle infielder. So he's going to play for about 15 years no matter what he does. But he's just part of this whole Oriole youth movement. And I would say, you know, last year I looked at the Orioles and went, well, that's kind of 2 years ahead of time. And, and I'm not so sure that they're out of sync anymore. I mean, they're a viable team. You know, the Red Sox and the Yankees and the Blue Jays spend a lot of money, but they seem to tread water an awful lot. And the Orioles are a good, young, fun team to watch. And frankly, that fan base has suffered for so long.
Oh, dear. Yeah. It's been a while.
We had Dan Connolly on the show. This was probably a few years ago. And he was covering the team. And he said their farm system for a long time and their player development for a long time was an embarrassment. But it's not anymore. And they're coming. He kind of called it. He saw it coming. And that seems to me like it was 3 years ago.
I don't remember exactly, but it was something like
that. Yeah, it was a while ago. It wasn't just like 2 years in the last year or two. He saw it coming.
You were talking to Dan. Could you not get Dan today? Dan's one of the best.
There's no doubt about that. He is one of the best.
We like to think you're one of the best too, Andy Linker.
Yes.
Come
on. There's no doubt.
We like to think all our guests are among the best. I'll tell you honestly, our guests have been. The vast majority of them, we thought they'd be good, and they were better than we thought they'd be. Gordy?
I've enjoyed talking with everybody we've had.
It's been fun, and it's really been fun in that regard.
I helped, kind of balance.
You're a counterbalance. You're a counterpoint. It's point counterpoint.
I just wish you had a little more enthusiasm and knowledge about the game. That's
what the hell?
I mean, come on, Andy.
Bring it.
This baseball, this is all new to me. We're talking about the Orioles, and the guy, Gordy, you just mentioned his name, Colton Cowser, and, obviously one of the many young players. Keep an eye on him. They just called him up. He won for three in his first game, but he is I saw him last year play for Billy, and, oh, my gosh, he's, Westbrook was there.
Mm-hmm.
A couple years ago. These guys are all good. They have another kid coming along, Heston Jerstad.
Mm-hmm.
Just going to keep cranking these guys out.
Yeah, that's impressive. Yeah, that's not easy to do.
What position does he play?
It's not easy to do. He is a first baseman outfielder.
Okay.
Now, they already have a million outfielders, and Cowser's going to have a tough time finding playing time, but they didn't bring him up to sit.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
The guy that's going to wind up sitting out of that deal is going to be Aaron Hicks.
Yeah, which he
played very well for them.
I thought so too. He really helped them when they brought him over.
Jerstad is primarily an outfielder, but I know that he's been playing first base a lot this year.
Mm-hmm.
So I see him eventually. It's funny because the big young guy a couple of years ago was Ryan Mountcastle,
mm-hmm.
who's done a very credible job. And who knows, down the road, and the road's very coming up very quickly, he might be the guy forced out of a job.
Yeah, maybe flip him for starting pitching, because that, to me, that's still their glaring weakness. I think they pitched better than I expected this year, but I still think that they need a real stud at the top of their rotation.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that's a great point, that you could move a guy like Mountcastle
mm-hmm.
for pitching, because... they do need it. I mean, your top of the rotation guy is two guys, Kyle Gibson and Dean Kramer, and they both have ERAs north of 4.7.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Andy, do you see a lot of games now? Do you get to the ballpark a lot?
Well, I am at on City Island about every home game. Major League Baseball as the official scorer in Harrisburg.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Well, no, they can't find anybody else dumb enough to take the job.
I would not want that gig.
No, actually, it's a lot of fun. I enjoy it. It gets me out of the house, and it gives my wife about 5 hours a night of just total freedom.
Yeah,
and bliss.
What a break. What a break for her.
It's a great break. She says, don't you want to go early? I said, they're not going to
go early. She said, get there.
You'll be. You'll beat the traffic. It's funny. I see more baseball now than when I covered it and was doing, the Senators in Harrisburg as the beat writer and doing some major league stuff. now, and thank you Comcast, I can see like 4, 5, 6 games on a given day.
It's pretty great.
Wow. That's a lot of baseball.
It is.
You can fit them in now with the pitch clock, though.
That's true. See that?
You can get them all in, right? You can squeeze in those West Coast games.
Every time I hear your voice, Andy, speaking of covering Major League games, I think about standing in the hallway outside the Giants clubhouse waiting for Barry Bonds to come out and sneer.
That was all of us. That was all three of us. And many others.
That's right. And there had to be 50 people standing.
Oh, my God. I remember thinking, I'm going to get there early. I'm going to get there early and get into the clubhouse. And I went flying down there and, oh, look at all these assholes. But Barry foremost among them, yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Well, on that day, Gordy, were you there that day, Mike? For
yes.
You were part of that zoo?
Yeah, I was. Yeah.
Well, it's funny. I was just thinking about this story the other day, and it involves Dan Colley. Dan and I were in the clubhouse, like everybody else, just kind of loitering. We were all looking at each other's. You know, you get in that situation, you guys notice. You spend most of the time looking at the top of your shoes.
Yep.
Yeah, because you know everybody's looking at you like, you know, okay, you're a shark. and I don't know if you remember Steve Klein, the pitcher, kept circling the clubhouse and kind of mocking us as we waited by Barry Bonds' empty locker. But at that point, when we were all kind of congregated around looking at each other's penny loafers. Dan Connelly, yeah, Dan and I were talking. We saw this kid at the other end of the clubhouse, and he was. If you remember, Barry Bonds was on the cover of Sports Illustrated that week.
Yeah.
And this kid was in the corner of the clubhouse. He was a rookie reading the magazine. So Dan and I walk over together, and it's like, well, he's in New York. I'm in Harrisburg. We're not really competing, so. We go up and talk to him together. And we asked him, he's only been with the team for 3 weeks at that point. And we asked him if it was a good story. And he said, yeah, it's a pretty good story. And he's learning a lot about Barry Bonds. And we said, well, what do you mean? He says, you know, you've been here for 3 weeks. He said, yeah, I've been here for 3 weeks, but I haven't met the guy yet.
What was the guy's name?
You haven't met him yet? He says, well, he hasn't talked to me, and I'm really kind of, you know, I don't feel like I should talk to him.
What was the guy's name?
Who was the guy?
Yeah, who's the player?
Say, Lincecum.
That's who I thought he was thinking. That's who I would have bet on that he was talking about. Yeah.
It was Lincecum, and he had just come up, and he had short hair, you'd recognize him.
Wow.
Actually, you wouldn't recognize him.
You wouldn't recognize him, yeah.
You know, if you remember when Bonds, I remember we all had to go cram into the dugout.
Yes,
to
I remember that too.
Yep.
Okay, and when Bonds came in, he dropped one of his bats he was holding.
Mm-hmm.
I picked it up and handed it back to Barry. Did he say thank you? No.
No.
Am I bitter? A decade and a half later?
No, not at all.
I don't know. It just comes to mind when I tell stories about Barry Bonds.
Well, it begs the question, what must it be like covering Ohtani, given, you know, I'm sure there's a glut of Japanese media covering him, but, you know, as well as, U.S.-based media. That must be quite something on a nightly basis.
Well, I think what's different now, Gordy, what's changed the whole thing, and part of it, was solidified, unfortunately, with the pandemic, and it really changed the rules of engagement for media and players. Where now is a press conference for everything, and you really don't have a lot of clubhouse access.
Fair.
So there's no real zoo in hanging around trying to get to Ohtani because you just wait for the presser.
For better or worse.
What's that?
For better or worse, right? Mostly worse.
Yeah, probably a little bit worse because as a beat writer, I mean, if you were parachuting for a story, that's fine. You know, that was never a problem. You know, like with the NFL, you know, Gordy, you know, and Mike, you know, it's like, okay, there's the post game press conference, and you know, you can do a little bit one on one in the locker room, but. You know, you're not really going to get anything great anymore unless you're a beat writer that's there every single day, and there's so few of those now.
That's how you do it. That's how it's done.
Yeah. But we digressed, and boy, we have definitely digressed. That's... We should go back to George Carlin, but go ahead.
No, but well, this, you know, this is what we do, though.
Yeah,
this
that could be the name of this. That could be the name of this podcast. One big ass digression. That's how we know it. Hey, Andy, we appreciate it.
Thank
man.
You, Andy.
Always, 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 we love talking baseball with
you.
Yes,
we do.
And we're glad you could give us some time today.
Well, I'm thankful that you had me on, and gosh. You guys got to make sure Dan's on your A-list or something.
Well, yeah, he is on our list, believe me, he is. I mean,
I'm pretty sure we're going to have him this summer. I actually have talked to him. And I
communicated with him earlier this week, and he said as you know, he got laid off by the Athletic, which is unconscionable to me. I'm one of the many unconscionable things that's happened. And he hopes to be latch on elsewhere. He didn't say where, and we hope to have him on in August.
Yeah. Well, that would be great, because you guys got to go back and get your A-team guys and your B-team guys again. I mean, you know, you're reaching into your bench here, and you're pulling out like Buddy Harrelson.
No.
But again, it's a good roster. It's a good roster. We can go deep into the bench.
You are the Manny Mota of Phillies.
Manny Mota, I like that. You know, Manny Mota could probably still hit today.
I bet he could. I always loved watching him play, because he would just come in and just get a hit, and didn't matter, you know, he'd just wake him up and go get a hit, right?
There you go.
One of the all-time nice people in the game.
Is that right? That's good.
Yeah. I mean, he was with the, you know, he just, nobody ever says anything bad about Manny Mota.
No, I can imagine. Boy, and he could just rake, man.
Yeah. Oh,
he really could.
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, thanks, Andy.
Thanks, Andy, so much. Be well.
You too, gentlemen. Thanks very much for having me.
All right,
you
take care, buddy.
Okay.
Andy Linker, ladies and gentlemen.
He brings it.
I've said this before. I'll say it again. I just love how much he loves baseball.
Yeah.
He kind of brings your whole mood up just talking to him about the game.
And I think we had him on about this time, or maybe a little later in the season last year, because we were talking about those four shortstops.
Yes, we were.
That was a big piece of the discussion. Anyway.
Yeah. But we didn't get to talk about the Bryce Harper piece about, I mean, this is something we talked about before we started, Matt, about how, you know, he's hit okay, but he's not hit for any kind of power yet, which I don't know if that's going to be a season-long thing or if he's going to get stronger as he goes on.
Yeah, it makes me wonder if he didn't come back too quickly from the injury, because A, he has not hit with any power, even though the on-base and batting average numbers are close to what you would normally expect from him. Peak Harper, but close.
No, yeah.
And also, he can't throw at all. He still can't throw at all.
No.
According to them, not according to me. Mm-hmm. So that tells me maybe he came back too quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, you know, I love that guy.
He's
a great competitor.
I love
total pro.
Yes, I love
gives
that.
You what he has every day.
You can never question how much he cares.
He's great.
But
it's fair to wonder if he didn't come back.
But that would be a Harper thing to do, to come back too soon, because he just wants to play.
And supposedly came back, he's the fastest in history in terms of his recovery from this injury. And, you know, again, 12 teams make the playoffs. They probably could have dog paddled without him for a couple months. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with you, but I guess there's the whole thing about setting a tone, and he certainly sets a really good tone for that team about how to play, how to approach the game, like, day in and day out, because it is such a grind.
Yeah.
And I just love, you know, that he's their key guy, and that's the guy you look to.
That's a good guy to look to.
Yeah.
He really has turned out to be. When he was a kid, he seemed like a little bit of a goofball, you know, you know, you can't ask for a lot more from him. And you know what? They're going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I would think.
They're going to make the playoffs and have another chance to do what they did last year, which again, is not very likely. It wasn't very likely last year either. But
yeah, but you never know, right? I mean, anything, they're a little better. I mean, their pitching is a little deeper.
Yeah.
Their lineup is more balanced, probably. I mean,
and as Andy alluded to, if Kimbrel can really turn out to be a guy that they can rely on in that role, for the long haul, then a lot of these arms that they have in their bullpen are guys who were throwing 100 miles an hour with breaking stuff. You know, you can mix and match and make it work. And of course, they have a great starter. I think he's great. And he didn't make the All-Star team. I think he probably should have, Zach Wheeler. But But
That was a little surprising. That is something that only Castellanos made the All-Star team. Now Rob Thompson is the manager, but Castellanos is the only player from the Phillies to have made
four Orioles. Made
four
it,
Orioles. Adley Rutschman,
kind of a barometer of what's happening.
Yeah, right? Four Orioles. Adley Rutschman, their catcher. Austin Hayes, an outfielder, hitting over 300. Felix Bautista, their closer, and Yennier Cano, their setup guy, which is pretty fitting, I think, as far as where they're at.
Yeah.
Because their bullpen has been quite good. Bautista's just a lights-out closer. His earned run average is like one, and he's, a strikeout guy, which is what you hope for in that role for sure. So, yeah, they're 15 over. They've had a little bit of a rough patch lately, but their starting pitching is probably overachieved, if anything.
It's good that they're back.
I love it. I really want to go down to a game because it's my favorite ballpark. Yeah, it's just a really ballpark. Wonderful place to be to watch a game, and it just feels like Baltimore should have a good baseball team.
Yeah, it does seem like that, and but now they do.
Yeah. So we wanted to talk a little bit about James Harden is still on the Sixers, even though he apparently doesn't want to be on the Sixers, and the Sixers are looking to accommodate him. But I'm not. They seem like they have a real limited. Outlets as far as where they can send him, maybe the Clippers, but what are the Clippers going to send back? Do you like the Norman Powell, Terrence Mann, Robert Covington expiring contract or something like that? I mean, that doesn't excite me, but I'm kind of betwixt in between because on one hand, I think they need to mix it up just because I don't want to see the same team again. It's not going to be the same team because they've lost some guys on the fringes. So I don't know what to make of their off season so far, but it's nothing very exciting unless you're like Patrick Beverley and Mo Bamba.
Well, Mo Bamba. Harden, it's funny, he had this player option, okay, and if he'd have opted out, that would have obviously been perceived as, he doesn't want to be here anymore.
Right.
But it was the media perception was kind of like the fact that he opted in indicates that he doesn't want to be here anymore. What the hell? What am I missing there?
I don't know. I guess you just can't turn down $35.6 million.
Yeah, I guess. And maybe it's an acknowledgement from him that he's got to rebuild his reputation a little bit and then get one more big contract.
Which
right?
I'm not sure it's coming.
I'm not sure it's coming either.
He's almost 34.
That's a play, though, if you're him and his management team. And
I don't know.
Is that what he's thinking?
Yeah, I think that he was hoping to get a better, long-term thing from, the Sixers or somebody. But I guess they read the tea leaves and said, that's not in the offing. So let's take this big pile of money and see where we can go.
I mean, to be clear, if he opts out of this player option, he would literally have been a free agent.
Yeah.
He would have been a free agent on the market for anybody.
Yeah, and Houston was the first rumor you heard, but they signed Fred VanVleet to a big contract, 3 years, $120 million, which is probably more than you would typically get Fred Van. I love Fred VanVleet, but that seems like a big money.
But I don't know if I love him in that spot.
Yeah.
You got a lot of young guys
who
want to figure out how to do it. And I think he tends toward dominating the ball.
Mm-hmm.
I like him a lot.
I do too.
I don't see him as a guy who you really like. He's not Luka Doncic.
No.
And I'm not.
No, he's
I
just a little guy. He's just
I think there's limit. Yeah, he's a little. Boy, that takes me back. But anyway, I don't know. But I just thought that was funny the way that the Harden opt-in was perceived. Like, whoa, he doesn't want to be here anymore. Well, if he had chosen the other thing, well, that would have been he doesn't want to be here anymore.
Yeah. So, to me, it's interesting because the Clippers, they probably want to mix it up because I'm sure they're kind of a little tired of their mix.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And the Sixers probably need to churn it some too. So I think it's two teams with the same.
What's Paul George's contractual situation?
I don't know the answer to that, but I don't know if that would happen or not. It seems like the reporting is that it's going to be like the Norm Powell, Terrence Mann, Covington draft picks, whatever, something in that realm. That would be the deal. Yeah, which is like, it doesn't excite you. Norman Powell's an okay player, but does that excite you? I don't see that really improving their team. Now, the other thing, the parallel thing, is Damian Lillard wants to be traded from the Trailblazers. The Sixers have said that they won't include Tyrese Maxey in any kind of deal for Dame Lillard. I'm not sure I disagree with that. I kind of like Tyrese Maxey, and I'd like to see what his ceiling is, because he was really good last year.
Oh, so you I thought you had the opposite opinion. Yeah, so you're saying you
yeah.
Maxey would be close to off limits if you
yeah, I kind of I mean I get it. It's Damian Lillard, but Damian Lillard's 33. How many more years of top notch production does he have? And what's Maxey, 22? You
know? And what, how would Lillard work with a guy that you've got to throw the ball inside to 20 times a game?
It's a whole different thing for him. He's never had that.
Yeah, he's never had it. He's never had it. I'm not sure it would be a problem because he's really good.
I love
he's
him.
He's a really good
And he
fan
seems like a decent guy, too.
Yeah.
He does
well,
seem
I
like
think he's a solid citizen. Yeah, I don't think that's a problem at all. And the other thing is, if you somehow get him without giving up Maxey, well, then you have those two guys as your starting guards, which seems like a little bit of a defensive problem against a league with so much length and athleticism.
Yeah, and neither of them will ever be accused of being defensive stoppers. Yeah.
Yeah, even though they're both quick and they could be. I mean, they try. I mean, it's not like they sort of zone out on that half of the game, but that seems like it would be a problem. And you'd almost have to have another piece if you get Lillard and give up Maxey.
Right. I think that the bigger problem is apparently Lillard wants to play in Miami. And usually when Pat Riley wants a guy, he gets him.
Yeah. That,
and I don't know.
They're the favorite to get
him. I mean, but I don't know if Miami has enough to get him, like, on their own. I mean, Tyler Hero would obviously be in that trade, but I think they'd have to get a third team involved to make that happen.
Yeah.
So I don't know who that third team would be. But Miami, as, you know, it's like Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson, whatever. If you're Portland, why would you do that?
It just doesn't seem like enough.
Mm.
I was listening to ESPN this morning, and Brian Windhorst was on there. He's a good NBA guy.
Yeah,
and he was saying, he was talking about how adamant the Sixers are about not wanting to deal Maxey, for one thing. And also, he was kind of saying that he's not sure how it works for Miami. Mm-hmm. That Miami is it's going to be hard to make this happen. But another thing he said was he's certain that the Sixers are going to do something substantial.
Yeah, they have to.
That's coming. It's all quiet on the Sixers front right now, but it's not going to be that way until the season starts.
I agree with that, and we've seen before Daryl Morey is not one to rush. Like, look at how he handled the Ben Simmons thing. He waited for months before.
Winhorst said he's patient, but he's certain that Morey has something up his sleeve. He has something in mind, and something's coming.
I think they have to. I mean, I don't think you can bring back a facsimile of that team. I mean, we've seen that team, and it's an okay team, but it's not a championship team.
And as close as they came to beating Boston, they really melted down at the end of that series.
The other part of the equation is to, I mean, if you stand pat and say, okay, we're going to lay low this season, well, how's Embiid going to react to that? You know, is he going to come at the end of the next season? Yeah. Is he going to say, get me out of here?
Now, we've all seen on social media, maybe you haven't, but I have seen on social media many, many pictures from this party throwing the party?
Michael Rosen?
All right. But anyway, the owner of the Sixers is at this party.
Right.
Harden, Embiid, Harris. Tobias Harris, I don't know who else.
Yeah, I forget who else. But yeah, so I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
Probably nothing.
But they're all making nice, at least now in the early July.
Yeah, well, it's business to be done, I think, on that front.
Yeah. More to come.
Anyway, I think that's where we're at the end of the journey. Would you agree? Anything else for the good of the order, Mike?
Well, it was fun. I appreciate having Andy
always,
on.
Always with Andy. It's fun.
Good to talk about baseball. Maybe we don't do it as much. But baseball's hard to talk about because they play every day.
Yeah.
So it's incremental little sample sizes, so it's hard to...
But I think this was a good milestone, with the All-Star game coming up next week. I think this is probably as good a place as any to...
It was brilliant on our part to do this.
Yes. There's no doubt about that.
All right. More brilliance to come in coming weeks. I promise.
We hope.
He's Gordy. I'm Mike. See ya.
See you later.